Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. 2017 has seen its share of extreme weather events, from hurricanes in Texas and Florida to drought in South Dakota. But scientists are searching for even more cataclysmic weather events in the Earth's history, the likes of which we've never seen, in order to understand our planet and predict what we might experience in the future. Tonight on SDPB-TV, you can watch NOVA's Killer Floods. Joining us now with a preview, NOVA producer Chris Schmidt is on the line from Brooklyn. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
I am excellent, and I'm hoping we could start with a little bit of behind-the-scenes look at how these NOVA programs are produced, if you don't mind, because I'm watching this, and I'm wondering, do all these scientists know each other and are working together, or are you at NOVA sort of finding people that will tell this complete story and then visiting them separately?
Well, so Norm, the producer of the film, and I'm overseeing the film from the NOVA side, but we have an independent producer who made the film named Ollie Twinch. So normally what the producer does is they have an idea or we have an idea and we work together to figure out what the story is. And in a case like this where we're really looking at ancient disasters, there's usually more than one case study that we're kind of looking at. And so what the producer will do is research the story, try to understand what happened, and to find the key scientists, the people who can tell the story the best, and put them together in the film. So they may or may not know each other, you know, just professionally, but we are the ones who are kind of stapling them together for the show.
Right, and you must be plugged in then to, I mean, so many different scientists, so many different scientific publications, and the work of what people are doing. How does NOVA kind of keep track of all that?
Well, we rely a lot on our independent producers who make the films, but we also have a research staff in-house at NOVA who stay abreast of really pretty much every scientific advance or discovery of note. And, you know, we have various, among us, we have various areas of expertise, you know, between geology and physics and anthropology and archaeology and so forth. So between us and scientists we know, we have a deep backbench of scientists who we've worked with over the years that we can go to with questions, and we fact check everything extensively. So it's a good question. You're tapping into our backbench of scientific expertise that we rely on a lot on for outside help with.
And it's just fascinating. And then the story is so compelling. So you start out thinking killer floods sounds interesting, and then you get into the actual science and it's even more interesting than you could have predicted. And this is a program where the geologists shine, because it's a lot about looking at what's in the landscape and wondering how it got there. So we're going to go to Washington State, to Iceland, to Britain, in this the White Cliffs of Dover in this episode. But let's start in Washington State and the Scablands. Tell me, what can you tell just by looking at the Scablands?
Well, to me, the Scablands look like something that it's sort of these rock formations that are thrust up out of the landscape. There's one called the Dry Falls, which looks a lot like a horseshoe waterfall, but no, without any water in it. So in other words, it looks kind of like Niagara Falls if you took away all the water, but it's much, much, much larger. And you have these other sort of weird rock islands sticking up out of the landscape. And to me, they look like just something that took perhaps millions of years of wind and water erosion to carve. But it turns out what the geologists discover is that they were actually created really rapidly, which seems mind-boggling. And the idea is that in the past there have been these catastrophic floods of a magnitude that actually carved the bedrock of the planet within a matter of days or weeks. And it's kind of a mystery, you know, because we don't have anything like that in our contemporary experience. So the question is, how could something like that happen, and where would all that water come from? That's kind of the mystery of the show.
Right. And let's talk about some of the science that helps the scientists discover that it all happened at once, and this surface exposure dating. Tell me about that technology.
Well, you know, you can when rocks are exposed to the atmosphere and to the external environment of Earth, they're hit by cosmic rays, which are energetic particles coming from space, and that will subtly change the composition of the rocks. So if a rock has been buried for a long time and then exposed very recently, you can tell the difference between that and a rock that was exposed a long time ago because of the accumulated changes. So by doing this dating around these in the Scablands and in Iceland, doing this kind of dating with rocks that are at the surface, what they discover is that they were all exposed around the same time. So if rather than taking thousands or millions of years to slowly erode the rock, this huge quantity of bizarre rocky formations seems to have all been exposed at once, which is really puzzling. Again, our modern experience, we don't have any experience of some force that could do that.
It sort of makes you wonder just how powerful is water.
Right. Well, water, I mean, anybody who's been in a real flood that's even just a few feet deep or even a foot deep, if it's moving rapidly, it could move cars, it can move houses. I mean, water, the force of water, because of its mass, the momentum of water is really powerful. So it doesn't take a lot to be able to affect us. Now, if you imagine the kind of floods that created these geologic formations, it's not surprising that water could do it. It's just puzzling to know where all that water might have come from.
Right, because we're looking at another scientist in Montana then and talking about the community of Missoula and how it used to be completely underwater, and it seems like a big distance for that water to travel.
Yeah, the whole thing is so surprising because we rely on geologists to help us understand how the earth and the landscape change over time. And because for us, it seems bizarre. We look at something like Missoula, Montana, down in a valley, and geologists tell us this used to be an incredibly deep inland lake that covered this entire area. And in fact, in that case, was probably dammed up at the valley's end by a big glacier. And so what happened was when that glacier finally burst, this huge lake just drained out, in a matter of days, and created this massive torrent of water, which traveled hundreds of miles and carved all of this landscape. I mean, it's just mind-boggling. It's so huge. But all the evidence suggests that's exactly what happened.
Let's talk about some of that evidence and the scratches on the rocks and, the different evidence that scientists are using just by going out into the field and, chipping away at a rock or running their hand along the wall of a rock formation, finding that evidence. What are they looking for? What are they finding?
Well, it is like a detective story. I mean, they're looking for clues, and to the untrained eye, none of this stuff would stand out. But at that particular example you're talking about with Missoula, if you imagine a valley with an open at one end, filled with water, and that open end plugged by glacial ice, geologists know that as glaciers move, they will scratch and score and disrupt rock in a particular way. So they can see these scratches on the rock face that show where ice had been and ice had moved, which kind of further, it's another clue that leads them to start to picture how this whole lake used to be formed. Plus, they can also see on the sides of the hills around the valley, they can see these sort of horizontal lines which indicate places where water used to be almost like it used to be a beach. And, bit by bit, they can kind of put together this counterintuitive picture of what the landscape looked like thousands of years ago.
This is another thing NOVA does particularly well, I think. We're having this conversation, but if you watch the program, you can see what those, giant land ripples sort of look like. Mm-hmm. And then there's these, animations or computer models, or I don't know how you would describe that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do you decide as a team and what kind of science goes into, illustrating something that we've never seen in a way that helps capture our imagination, but also helps us understand visually what this science looks like played out?
Well, if we're going to tell you something, either a scientist interview or narration, we want to be able to show you the same thing we're talking about. And sometimes you can't really understand something that's abstract unless you can graphically represent it, in an animation or a schematic or something that kind of zeroes in on the salient kind of most important detail. So, for example, when we're talking later in the program about the land bridge that used to connect France to Great Britain across the chalk cliffs of Dover and Calais, it's hard to visualize from any perspective on the ground. So what we do is we just create a graphic map where we can show where that land bridge used to be and what the landscape behind it was like and so forth. And so these are just, you know, these are things that we decide to do because we think that the viewer needs help to understand something we're discussing or one of our scientists are discussing, because it's just a little too, you know, there's nothing you can point your camera at per se to really nail it.
There's a scientist, many scientists featured in this particular episode. And again, if you're just tuning in, we're talking about NOVA's killer floods, which you can see tonight on SDPB TV at 8 p.m. Central, 7 Mountain. My guest, Chris Schmidt, NOVA producer. The scientist I'm thinking of is Roger. He's a fluid dynamics specialist. I think Denlinger might be his last name. Anyway, he's showing you this computer model where he's trying to figure out where the water really would have flowed to sort of prove this theory or move, you know, gather some more information about what would have happened. And you turn it on and it does exactly what he would expect it to do to prove that this water, you know, created the scablands as we know it today in Washington State. And he gets this little smile. He's trying not to smile. And I just think there's part of him that's kind of pumping his fist and going, yeah, I figured
this
out.
Proud of that. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's an amazing tool because, you know, he creates a computer model of the topology, the landscape in the area, and then he imagines a huge amount of water where Lake Missoula used to be, and then he lets the computer model predict where the water would flow, and it creates a visual representation of the water flow based upon measurements of what the landscape is like, and it follows exactly the path that it would need to carve out these features that we saw, that we've already seen in the real features. So it's kind of a great, sort of proof of not only of the technique, of the modeling technique, but of the assumptions of what had happened. It's almost like if there was a crime scene and you put together an animation later that tries to show what actually happened. In that case, that's done by some forensic scientist who just wants to illustrate it for the jury. But in this case, the computer is given initial conditions and it just, you know, you just say go. And if it creates the same picture that you've seen with your eyes, it's a great confirmation. And if it doesn't, then the question is, well, is the computer model wrong or are my initial assumptions wrong or what?
How many of these massive floods, have scientists been able to really discover evidence of across the globe?
Well, I mean, there's the three in the program, which is in Iceland, in Lake Missoula, and the Scablands, and then in the English Channel. There's one very large one, that glacial lake flood in the Andes. I'm not as familiar with that story. And I other than that, I don't know. There certainly aren't any glacial lakes that burst and flood to the extent that we see in the Scablands anytime in the recent past. I know in the Alps there's a couple of areas that are sort of at risk. Basically, anywhere you have a big glacier bottling up a bunch of water, and you know that if the glacier is vulnerable, the whole thing could happen again. And there are a couple places around the world, in the Alps and in the Andes, where that is, there's a bit of a risk of that, although it's not as extreme as what we see in the Scablands.
Let's talk about the English Channel a little bit. And there's a rappelling down the cliffs of Dover, the chalk cliffs, looking across, thinking about what used to connect England and France. And there's a sort of the revelation of a barcode of sorts.
Right.
Tell me a little bit about the barcode.
Well, there are these, if you look at the White Cliffs of Dover and the White Cliffs of Calais in France, which are across the channel from each other, if you look carefully, if somebody, a geologist, helps you see it, there are these lines of, like, slate that are black lines in the, I think it's slate, in the chalk, kind of horizontal. And the elevation of those lines exactly matches the two, you know, Calais and Dover. So it's as though there was once some connecting chalk between those two, where the slate layers were line, you know, were sort of like horizontal across the entire distance. And it's just another piece of evidence that there was once more land there that got somehow eroded away or blown away by some event.
And this has to do with the nature of the chalk itself, right? As a substance, when chalk is with water, chalk, what happens? Yeah.
Yeah, the chalk over millions of years, the chalk is laid is basically the bodies of small, microscopic creatures that have shells made of with calcium carbonate, and as they die, their bodies rain to the sea floor, and they build up over time. So all that area, that whole area there, at one point was underwater, and changes in ocean chemistry would occasionally cause silicon and other elements to precipitate or to drop out and create these little layers that you see, these dark layers. And this stuff happened in the ancient past of the Earth, and the landscape has changed innumerable times over billions of years. It's a little hard to imagine, but that's where that chalk came from, basically.
Can you tell us anything about what you're working on now? Do you have any good projects in the pipeline that we can look forward to?
I'm in Brooklyn right now recording narration with a scientist named Jana Levin, who is the host of a show that we'll have on in January, a two-hour special about black holes. So change of pace. Not killer black holes, but black holes. And,
fascinating.
So that's going to be an amazing film.
You never get bored of your job. There's always something new and a new person to talk to, I bet. A little bit like my job. You always get to
find
the next interesting story. Well, this one, you don't want to miss it. It's called Nova's Killer Floods. It's tonight on SDPB-TV. You can see it at 8 p.m. Central, 7 Mountain. Producer Chris Schmidt, thank you so much for being here. We'll see you next time.
Great. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.